The fact that candidate Donald Trump called for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States, and that President Donald Trump calls for a ban on Muslims entering the United States. The latest version blocks people from 8 countries, 6 of them Muslim majority, presents a question for journalists. How credulously do you treat the White House claim that the ban isn't about religion? You would think it wouldn't be a hard question, and yet, as John Alsop at Columbia Journalism Review noted, a number of media who referred to a Muslim ban when it was first introduced have been seen to be blanding things out now to travel ban. The Supreme Court's December 4th decision to allow Muslim Ban 3.0, as it's been dubbed, to be implemented, even as challenges to its constitutionality make their way through the courts, certainly risks normalizing, legitimizing the ban in the public eye, making media scrutiny of the policy that much more critical. Joining us now to talk about these issues is Suman Raghunathan, Executive Director of SALT, South Asian Americans Leading Together. Welcome to Counterspin, Suman Raghunathan.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here.
It's not simply a matter of a ban or a no ban. There are other discriminatory policies, and there are other real-world effects of this kind of government legitimizing, if you will, of discrimination.
Absolutely, Janine. I mean, we cannot underestimate the impact of codifying discrimination and deepening a separation between those who are Muslim, Middle Eastern, Arab, South Asian, and the rest of the country. SALT has been looking at hate violence and indeed the relationship between hate violence and xenophobic political rhetoric for the better part of a decade. And what we've seen increasingly over the last several years has been an increasingly deep and intertwined relationship between xenophobic political rhetoric and its impact to really spur and encourage hate violence. You know, for several years, we weren't able to draw a direct relationship between the two, and we're very careful to not do so because we didn't yet have enough data. And yet, in the last year to 18 months, we've seen an increasing number of studies that really bear out the relationship that SALT has been suspecting for quite some time, which is that when our elected and appointed officials and those who aspire to be elected and appointed officials poison the nation's political debate and our national conversation on communities, indeed our communities, which is an incredibly diverse spectrum of folks in this country, right? So they include South Asian, Muslim, Arab, Christian, Middle Eastern communities. When we have individuals who call into question the very place and viability and protections afforded to all of those folks in the country, then we know that that indeed spurs violence against our communities. You know, we're in the process of finalizing an analysis of hate violence and xenophobic political rhetoric since the election, right? So roughly over the last year.
Right.
And what we've increasingly found is an even deeper relationship between the policies and views espoused by President Trump and those of his administration and acts of violence against our communities, which are reaching levels that we only saw in the year immediately after the events of September 11th. We're seeing over a 50% increase in the number of documented hate violence incidents since the November 2016 presidential election relative to the previous year. So the level of violence and the surging tide of violence really spurred by, encouraged by, and enabled by the views and political rhetoric coming out of this administration and of policymakers is really contributing to an increasingly problematic and toxic discourse at a national level about our communities. South Asians are the most rapidly growing demographic group in this country. And we're not only growing in places like California and New York and New Jersey, but we're growing in places like Texas. We're growing in places like Alabama. We're growing in places like Florida that have had a much more fraught national history on race. And so it's really throwing our communities and the actual physical safety of many of our community members straight into a maelstrom of policies that are very much in line with those of a resurgent white supremacist movement in this country. It means something when David Duke applauds explicitly anti-Muslim tweets from the president. And that's sending a message, indeed, to many individuals in the white supremacist movement in this country that their views and their actions are indeed believed in, echoed by, and implicitly supported by those who should do better.
Well, let's move on just to the resistance, finally. What do you see as the most effective ways for people to resist these attacks on community? And what role do journalists or just media play in that?
Well, let me take the answers to that question in reverse order.
Sure.
So you I think, referred to in the setup as well, the important role that media has played to really soften the blow or the impact of what is a Muslim ban to refer to as a travel ban. I think it's crucial that in particular journalists really put a priority to understanding and really covering on the ground the impact of these patently discriminatory policies, which are, to be clear, not only policies or attacks against Muslim, Arab, and South Asian American communities, but are really wholesale attacks on immigrants as well as communities of color writ large.
Right.
The decision to end DACA and the intransigence on the part of Congress to enact the DREAM Act, which would make a huge difference for, of course, nearly 800,000 undocumented Dreamers, but would include a significant share of South Asians, right? I think all of these dynamics and policies have a tremendous impact on communities on the ground. And it's crucial that journalists not only call a spade, particularly around drawing a connection between the explicit aims and goals of restrictionists and of white supremacists who are currently occupying and have occupied positions of power in this administration, but are also really connecting the dots between those policies and their impact on the ground.
Right. Right.
I also think, you know, that we, in terms of the resistance, we have seen a tremendous amount of resistance, right? The reality on the part of organizers and grassroots communities that all of these attacks are attacks on all of us has been an incredibly inspiring and hopeful reminder of the need for us to build strong coalitions and of the need to continue to call out not only the administration, but also of those who are informing the administration's efforts to explicitly target our communities.
We've been speaking with Suman Raghunathan, Executive Director of South Asian Americans Leading Together. You can find their work, including their statement in response to the Supreme Court's recent decision, on their site, saalt.org. Suman Raghunathan, thank you so much for joining us today on Counterspin.
Thank you.